Dr. Pierce is the committee chair. Deirdre is our FMP coordinator. And they have a very logically laid out process for us to get through all the decisions and have all the discussions that we certainly need to have and we've been working on for a long period of time. One issue of note, I wanted to let the audience and the council members know that I've asked Dr. Pierce and Deirdre to prep the council or prep their presentation such that the first item we will take up today will be the capacity issue. I believe it's decision number 5, the stacking and leasing issue. That will be the first item the council will tackle, the first motion we'll tackle today. I will go to the audience for comment. Once a motion's up on the board, I'll ask the council if they have any questions of the committee chair or staff. And I'll go to the audience, and I'll look for members that want to speak in favor of the motion, and then I'll ask for members of the audience that want to speak against. We'll do it in an orderly fashion. When we run out of somebody on either side, we'll come back to the council. They'll have had the benefit of the discussion from the audience, the presentation from the committee and staff, and then they will deliberate and vote. That's the process for today. With that, I turn it over to Dr. Pierce.
All right, thank you, John. Tab 4 is where you'll find all the scallop material. Additional documents were placed at your tables yesterday, I believe, some today as well. The revised decision document, as well as the DEIS for Amendment 15, should be kept front and center, but the one that should be most front and center, I suspect, is the decision document itself. That should be very helpful, instructive, and help us get through all these motions in a timely way. Also, we have Document 7, Impacts on Other Fisheries, and then Document Number 9. Document Number 9 has the committee motions with the rationale, motions that were made and decisions that were made at our September 23rd meeting of last week. The decision document also lists the committee recommendations as well as input from the plan development team, and it also has advisory panel preferences and guidance. So it's a very good document, well thought out document, a lot of information within it. Don't be intimidated by its size or by the amount of text, although it's easy to become intimidated by that. It's easier to follow than you might think, and Deirdre, of course, will walk us through that decision document as we take these motions one by one. So as John said, this afternoon we're going to approve Amendment 15 and select proposed measures for submission, and we have about 4 hours to accomplish that task, maybe 4.5, maybe 5 hours. If John has got anything to do with it, 10 hours. Right. So I hope you had a good lunch, since John does tend to skip dinner. Chairman's prerogative. Anyways, is it possible for us to get done with our business in 4 hours or 4.5 hours, whatever? I believe it is possible because the committee, I know, the committee has done its work well and has positioned this council to act fairly quickly on the document. Of course, there are a few places where we will slow down and perhaps slow down rather significantly due to the controversy of the measures. And John has indicated we're going to do stacking and leasing first. That, of course, is where most of the controversy lies, if not all the controversy. No, most, not all. Permit stacking and days at leasing have dominated the discussion, I'm sure, within this room and at every committee meeting and certainly at the public hearings. So, if the council disagrees with the committee recommendation on permit stacking, for example, then we'll have to spend a lot of time dealing with decisions related to stacking and destacking that the committee did not address because we recommended no action, meaning no permit stacking. So if this council decides to go with the permit stacking, then be prepared for 10 hours. This council did set the stage for today, last fall, when we decided what to bring to public hearings that were held this past summer. The public comment has been extensive and, again, tended to focus primarily on stacking and leasing and also limited access general category issues. Of course, we have an ITQ fishery, changes to be made to that fishery that also created a great deal of public comment. Now, staff has summarized those comments. Summaries, I believe, are in the binder. Very well put together, very thoughtful, very comprehensive. The plan development team also has been extremely helpful to the committee. As we waded through all those comments, offered questions for clarification and elaboration, analyses, the advisory panel in particular was very useful. They provided guidance that helped the committee out in a major way. As a matter of fact, it's safe to say that the committee followed a lot of the advisory panel guidance, and that will be reflected in the motions that were made, the decisions that we've made, the recommendations you're getting today. Now, I'm quick to point out that our staff, Deirdre, Jessica, Demet, they've done a stellar job in preparing us for the hearing, summarizing the comments, revising the DEIS, and then developing the decision document. So they provided an invaluable service to me as chairman. And as always, the regional office has been extremely helpful. Hannah, Pete Christopher, Emily Bryant were very much involved in this process and in critiquing the DEIS and offering up some suggestions and questions, need for clarifications to help the service work its way through this document as well. All right. Amendment 15 is about bringing the Scallop FMP into compliance with the reauthorized Magnuson-Stevens Conservation and Management Act, such as the requirement that we set catch limits that NIPS has termed ACLs to prevent overfishing, including measures to ensure accountability. I mean, that's first and foremost. We've got to get into compliance with the MSA. The committee and this council have benefited greatly from the recent Scallop assessment. You heard a review this morning from Steve Cadron, also from, of course, Jim, relative to what came out of that assessment. And just to repeat, the bottom line is we were not overfished in 2009. We were above the biomass target in 2009, over twice the threshold. So that's very good news. Also, overfishing did not occur in 2009, although we are close to the SAR estimated FMSY value. We heard that conclusion earlier this morning. Along with dealing with these required MSA measures, the council last fall also decided to address the excess capacity issue in this fishery and to consider ways to provide more flexibility for efficient utilization of the resource. That's stated that way in the DEIS. And then the other objectives that we set for ourselves are to make the plan more effective, consider measures to address essential fish habitat closed areas if phase two of the EFH omnibus amendment is delayed, consider adjustments to the research set-aside program, and then to consider a change in the scallop fishing year. And for council members who have been around for a little while, this is not a new issue. We've debated this issue before, gone to public hearing before regarding a change in the fishing year. Now, with all that said, it's best that we now turn to Deirdre, who will again give us some introductory information, and then shift right to the excess capacity discussions and the motions, decisions, recommendations of the committee to this council. So, Deirdre, if you would, please.
Good afternoon. The presentation I'm going to give is document number 10. I'm going to just give a few intro slides, and then I'll jump forward to the stacking and leasing under the capacity section of the document. So today is the scheduled final action on Amendment 15. As David mentioned, this has been under development for a little less than 3 years. And just last week, the advisors met on Tuesday. The committee met on Wednesday, got through a lot of material on the slide. You can see originally the advisors were tasked with focusing on the more controversial kind of split decisions to try to reach consensus on those more difficult questions. They were successful with that and ended up working past dinner and actually got through the entire action pretty much. The committee followed the next day, just last week, reviewed all the written comments and some PDT and AP input on certain issues, clarified several outstanding issues related to some of the measures, and pretty much in the same fashion, you do have a preferred alternative for essentially every single option in this document. Very briefly, the meeting materials, you can get a little lost. I realize we've buried you with quite a few. Just to highlight three, David mentioned a few as well that I think you should try to keep handy. The summary of written comments, document number three, is, again, we received extensive comments on many different measures within the document. We tried to paraphrase those down to give you a quick feeling for what the large scope of comments covered. So as you're making motions, you might want to refer to, they're organized by the questions in the decision document. You can quickly get a quick pulse feel for what the majority of written comments covered related to that particular issue. In terms of the decision document 5, which we have updated with the advisory panel and committee motions, again, you can also flip through that under each decision as you're working through the day. Finally, if you're looking for a little committee rationale, we tried to include a sentence or two from last week to give you a full feeling for what the committee discussed and why they ultimately made the final recommendation that they did. So we will be referring to these mostly, and also when we get to the Yellowtail AM section, I referenced this at the committee meeting last week, that we do have some input from the Groundfish PDT, which came in by memo also last week, which you all should have by now, probably under the Groundfish tab. And we have updated, based on some of the comments raised by the Groundfish PDT, we've tried to respond to that in the time that we had a little bit to bring you with maybe some new ideas we can talk about later today under that topic. So I'm going to skip right away through all the ACL decisions that we'll have to revisit, starting with slide 14. So if you can join me turning a few pages, getting right into objective number 2 of this amendment. There were several measures considered to address excess capacity in the limited access scallop fishery, and the overarching question most definitely is, should the council adopt stacking and or leasing to address excess capacity in the limited access fishery? We looked at the no action alternative, of course. We looked at stacking only, leasing only, and stacking and leasing. Stacking would be a full permit and its days at sea and trips associated with it. Leasing is more flexible and could include as little as one day at sea, all the way up to the equivalent of 2 permits. So you would be able to lease an entire day at sea allocation as well as access area trips, or you could adopt both of those options for stacking and leasing. Just to refresh your memory, when we reviewed this document in June, you approved it to go out for public hearings, the DEIS. We spent a lot of time at the June Council meeting going through all the different analyses within the EIS, so I'm not going to do that today. Hopefully, it's been captured in the decision document. We do have a few sentences and kind of key points throughout to remind you what the EIS basically concludes, as well as then the motions from the different groups below. But just to remind you, the Council did identify stacking and leasing as preferred when you sent the EIS out for public hearings this summer. But you didn't get more specific except that you thought a fishing power adjustment should be applied in both those cases. But in terms of all the sub-decisions related to restrictions and leasing from CPH and all those nitty-gritty details, there were no preferred options. So very briefly, the advisors went through this. You can see on the next slide, 15, a lot of different motions. Both groups kind of struggled with the same thing. At first, trying to identify both stacking and leasing as preferred. Eventually, that was split out. And the final motion from the advisors was to recommend leasing, motion 12B, leasing as preferred, including fishing power and mortality adjustments to be applied. So you can see the detailed motions that were passed from the advisors on slide 15. I'm sure you'll notice right away the vote was very close and the chair had to vote to break a tie. So just as the public comments, we are not getting an overwhelming support one way or the other. The decisions were all very close related to leasing and the subsequent motions from the advisory panel. In terms of the committee, slide 16 of this presentation includes the motions related when the committee first addressed this the next day. In a similar way, a couple different approaches were taken at first, either called out of order or failed or split and things like that, or substituted. In the end of the day, motion 11 is the one that prevailed from the committee level, which would be to adopt leasing of days at sea and or access area trips as preferred for this amendment. That's the recommendation from the committee. The vote was 5-2. If you want to see how this plays out in the decision document, I've just notified that it's on pages 7 and 8, since this is your basically first decision today. I'm going to stop with the next slide just to remind people, with all of the leasing discussions, it always included the idea that there would be some sort of fishing power adjustment and mortality adjustment. So I just want to refresh your memory of how that would work later. If it goes down this way, you'd need to make a decision about what these values should be. But just so you remember how it actually works, is these adjustments were designed by the PDT using a production model with lots of different aspects included. We use real landings data and information about the vessels actually fishing in the fishery now. And all the vessels were grouped into horsepower and length classes based on their size and power. And basically, depending on where your vessel lies, if you decide to lease or stack with someone else that is a different size or category, a certain adjustment would be applied. So the example that is on the screen, just so you can see how this will work, if you happen to be in the third length horsepower class, which is 600 to 720, essentially, horsepower, and the first length class, which is the smallest vessels from 50 to 70 feet, and you decide you want to lease with someone in the category of the smallest horsepower and smallest length, you'll see that there will be a charge. You'd only receive 90%, 90.3% of a full allocation. So using an example of 40 days at sea, if you're going to move days from basically group 1-1 to group 3-1, you'd get 90% of that allocation, which would actually come out to be 36.1 days at sea would be charged for that first adjustment. These adjustments are a dual adjustment, so that would be basically the first adjustment is completely based on your vessel. The second adjustment is what we've been calling a mortality adjustment, and this would be applied across the board. No matter who is stacking or leasing, there would be a charge depending on the value range is 5 to 11% in the document. I used 11% in this example because that was the committee's recommendation last week. So you basically take where you left off from the first adjustment, later apply an 11% overall adjustment to that amount, so your 36 days comes down to 32. So just so you have a reference how this would work, with leasing, if you go with how the committee recommended it, your 40 days at sea for this particular transaction would come down to 32.1. The ones that I've chosen as an example, they get higher or lower depending on which vessels you have. The maximum amount that we saw between the vessels, basically the smallest one going on the largest one, was a 30% charge for that first part, whereas the example I've shown there is only 10%. So it's a reasonable example, but they do go higher or lower depending on the vessel. So I'm going to stop there. I urge you to, and hopefully you've already read the public comments we've received about this topic, as well as the committee discussion and rationale. Just to let you know, the public input, the written input, is on pages 5 through 7 of document 3 related to this decision, and you can find it in the decision document also. So I'll just stop there. Let me take the first motion.
All right, Mr. Chairman, committee members, there's two ways to do this, but I suggest we stick with the decision document and then reference document number 9 that has the specific rationale for why motions were made and approved, or disapproved for that matter. So I would move on behalf of the committee, no action as it pertains to stacking as preferred under Section 3.3, measures to address excess capacity in the fishery. Let's back up a little bit, if I may. I notice there's a slightly different different language between the decision document and the draft documents. I bet there's a difference in language, slight difference in language, Deirdre.
Which committee motion number are you doing?
This is number 10. The motion to substitute. Let me read the one that's in the decision document so we stick with that one particular set of recommendations. To recommend, the motion is to no action as it pertains to stacking 3.3.2 as a preferred alternative to address capacity in the limited access fishery. So Deirdre is checking to see. So which one should we refer to, Deirdre?
The one in the decision document.
Okay. All right. So that is the motion, Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the committee. Essentially, it is to not support stacking, to basically go with the status quo. The reasons for this decision by the committee are described in document number 9, and I'll quickly highlight some of those reasons. Overwhelming public opinion against stacking, that was very clear to the committee. As a consequence, the majority felt that that opposition to stacking could not be ignored. There were many questions about how it would affect those who chose not to participate in stacking. As a matter of fact, the committee actually asked the plan development team to further work on this issue in light of public hearing comment to help us clarify whether or not, indeed, stacking could have an adverse effect on those who choose not to participate. And the conclusion was, and indeed that is the case. Of course, the plan development team did indicate that the conversion factor, the factors that would be applied to reduce days at sea, the fishing mortality adjustments, that might help to reduce the impact on those who choose not to participate. Also, there were questions about the national standards may not be consistent with council policies from Amendment 7 in 1998, and then additional text is described in document number 9. So that is the motion and a brief summary of the rationale for that recommendation.
Okay, thanks, Dave. I want the council members to have an opportunity to ask specific questions about the motion if they have them, if it's not clear what the motion is, but I'd like you to hold off on your debate or your staking out your positions on this motion until I come back from the audience. I want the audience to have the opportunity to talk to the council and to the motion on the board, and then the council members will have an opportunity to debate. So are there any specific questions from the council with respect to this motion? Okay, seeing none, I'll go to the audience. I'm looking for someone that would like to speak in favor of the motion. In favor. Anyone wishing to speak against the motion? Yes, sir.
My name is Roy Enochson. I am a scalloper and an owner of scallop vessels and permits. And I am opposed to the motion. I am in favor of stacking. I think there's been an awful lot of discussion on this issue, and some of it has gotten very emotional. But there are a few things that I think stand out a little bit, at least in my mind. This does not have an effect on consolidation. The consolidation in that fishery is already taking place. I believe that there's down to like 25% of the permit holders are single vessel permit holders. Whether you allow stacking or not, just about every permit that's sold goes to a multi-vessel owner. That doesn't mean that they all have to be in favor of stacking, but the consolidation is taking place. You have the 5% limit on the number of permits that any one individual can be involved in. And regardless of rumors and everything, you can't break that 5%. We have to report every year who owns what of every permit. National Marine Fisheries sends that out to us. The other things are that if you had stacking, it wouldn't happen overnight. It's an option. If nobody wants to do it, nothing happens. It's just an option. And if you did have some stacking, you would alleviate some of the Derby fisheries that you have, especially in Nantucket Lightship, Closed Area 2, Closed Area 1, because of the yellowtail issues. And even in the open area, when it comes next year, and we're going to be stuck with bycatch everywhere, the Derby will be diminished if you have stacking and leasing, for that matter. And I really think that we've maybe lost sight of some of those issues, because those are the core issues. You will have a better fleet, the boats will be better, the boats will be safer, and all you're doing, if you allow stacking or leasing for that matter, is you're getting rid of iron. You're taking iron off the water. Most of it, I would say, would be old iron. But you're not affecting consolidation. Thank you.
Somebody wishing to speak in favor of the motion? Yes, sir, in the green hat.
Hello. My name is Paul Wexler. I own four vessels in New Bedford. I also own three other shoreside businesses. I'm in favor of the no action. While I respect Mr. Enochson's position, I couldn't disagree with him more. The stacking is only good for the large vertically integrated companies such as Mr. Enochson's, who I believe, in my assumption, are working in conjunction with other people to violate the 5% rule. That being number one. Number two, this should be about jobs, jobs, jobs. Your own report commissioned by this council says it will kill jobs, it will kill communities, and have a social impact far greater than what we today have seen or heard. The other thing is, it's also going to take away from the single vessel owners who will lose equity in their boats immediately. Immediately. We've seen it in the housing market. We've seen it in the shrimp market. An excess amount of vessels will become for sale on the market. We all know what happens when that happens. You all see it with your houses today. That affects your borrowing ability. That affects everything. The other thing is, this will trickle down, because when they're stacking on these boats, who do you think will ultimately pay the price? It will be the crew, because the boat owners, and I'll tell you as myself, if I could stack my license on Joe's boat and receive, let's just use 2,000 pounds a day, 35 days, plus four closed area trips, 142,000 pounds, $2 a pound, like in the general category, that's 284,000. I don't net 284,000 on my boat share at the end of the year. So I'm either going to have to be the most generous boat owner out there and not charge my crew, even for my primary permit, or the dumbest businessman, and lose that $60,000 a year difference. It will trickle down to the crew. It will trickle down to the shoreside. I saw firsthand when the leasing came in the Dragon, I laid off within 1 year 30% of my workforce in my welding shop. That's one business. You will see it throughout every community. The gangs will pay. The single boat owners who lose equity will pay. The communities will pay. The only persons that will benefit from this will be the large fleet, vertically integrated companies who will reap the profits at every other person's expense. Thank you for your time.
Anyone else wishing to speak against the motion? Against the motion. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and council members. These are my latest thoughts on Amendment 15 on stacking and leasing.
Could you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, I'm sorry. My name is Joseph Gilbert, Stonington, Connecticut, Empire Fisheries, two limited access vessels. I am in favor of this motion. I would not stack my vessels. When I reflect on the amount of time we've spent on consolidation, I wonder how much progress we could have made on otherwise on cooperative research issues, mapping seasonal distribution of yellowtail, et cetera. Meeting after meeting, I hear one side and then the other. I have friends on both sides of this issue. It's too bad that it's so divisive. One side wants a hard-won, recovered fishery to remain status quo. One side says they have too much stuff and said they could operate better without some of their stuff. One side wants nothing, so there's really not much to consider. One side wants something, and when I allow myself to wonder about it, I ask, how did the people with too much stuff get too much stuff? I ask, how much is too much stuff a lifestyle or a business choice? And do these same overburdened folks have a second or even third homes that are only occupied on summer or ski weekend getaways? How about too many cars or shoes? But we're not asking for relief on vacation homes, cars, and shoes. We're asking for relief on too much stuff, because a conservation-neutral loss of stuff is good for business and has nothing to do with resource conservation or managing a fishery. When a person chooses to be an acquisitor and winds up with too much stuff, the usual course is to divest yourself of things, not seek regulatory relief to another's disadvantage. I pass construction yards where enormous equipment, cranes, digging machines, tugboats, sit idle for one reason or another. That's their season. When they have work, they go. When they're not, they're idle. It's the same with us. We have a season. It's a very profitable season, and I support this motion and do not favor stacking. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone wanting to speak against the motion? Okay, I'll ask for one more comment for the motion, and then I'm coming back to the council. Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. Well, I've had the fortune, good fortune or bad or otherwise, to serve both as a scalloper for the majority of my adult life and quite a few years within the council process and as a council member. Matter of fact, the majority of my years were spent with one of your earlier speakers, Mr. Enochson, and I respect his position on this, although I don't agree with it. It's unfortunate that we've had a parting of ways when our ways were so close for so many years, but that happens. But I would like to remind the council that a lot of the issues and a lot of the questions that have been asked and been answered are really irrelevant in this particular instance. This particular amendment was to address overcapacity. I raised the issue at the council meeting and asked the question and asked for a response. Will this action in any way reduce capacity, and is this attempt to allow stacking and leasing in any way due to a biological concern within the resource? And I guess the official response to that, at least as I understand it, I didn't receive a written report or a written reply, but in the last committee meeting, the answer was given through David's letter that he asked that same question, was responded to no. It does not address a biological need or necessity or requirement. I believe that the charge of the council, for the most part, deals with natural resources and protection of such for the benefit of the country as a whole. Well, these fishermen are part of that country, and the majority of these people have already spoken as to being opposed. Now, I'm speaking to stacking at this moment, and I'd like to speak again in response to the vote or the motion that's going to deal with leasing. But at this point in time, I believe that this motion is not only should be referred to as recommended for no action, but it should almost be ruled out of order because there is no biological need to go to this point. This is management of people, not resource. And I would respect your wishes on this. I hope you respect the wishes of the people, the majority of the people who have spoken out. And at times it's been referred to as not being in favor of. It's not a case of not being in favor of. The majority of the people have adamantly stated that they are totally opposed to this. There is a big difference with something that you can live with and something you totally cannot. And I can tell you right now, for the majority of the fishermen, captains, crews, and small boat owners or individual boat owners, that's the case. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Back to the council. To the motion on the board, Mary Beth.
Well, I'm on the SCALD committee, and I was in the minority of not supporting this motion. And so I still do not support the motion. I think that the committee has worked really hard to try to resolve a problem that was identified by this council of, you know, overcapacity, vessels tied to the dock, rafted in New Bedford at 5 deep, and saw that as a problem. So this is one tool that the committee did not select as preferred that could address the problem. Leasing could also be a management tool that could address the problem. But if we were to not move forward with anything, I wonder, do people not think we have a problem? I mean, because clearly vessels tied to the dock for 240 days a year is a capacity problem. I mean, clearly there is overcapacity in this fishery. People have made references to it not being related to the resource. National Standard 5 is very clear in stating that the resources in a fishery are not just the fish stocks themselves. I mean, we have an opportunity to reduce the carbon footprint of this fishery, which is very significant for the amount of effort that we have. People talk about jobs. Most of the people in the fishery, whether they're for or against this measure, are running one crew for two vessels. I mean, the job loss is already taking place. It happened in the past. The consolidations, this is not an allocation of the fishery. It is, that is a 5% cap, and I do take exception to people questioning Mr. Enochson's legal capacity in owning vessels and permits, that somehow he's acted in a legal fashion. He has not. And I just think that there is an opportunity here that will be lost. 3 years into this process for an identified issue, and to not take some action today would truly, I think, be a travesty for this fishery.
Anyone else in the council? Jim?
Yes, I'm opposed to this motion. And one of the reasons I'm opposed to this motion is we have the most dangerous fisheries in the United States of America in New England. I mean, that's a great title to have, and I think it's disgusting. We've had a report from the Coast Guard, thank you very much, that shows that the fleet is 36% of the fleet's over 30 years old, 37% of the fleet's over 20 years old. I mean, we have to have a mechanism here. We have to be forward-looking. We have to have a mechanism for people to be able to build new boats. It's a fact of life. They don't last forever. And if we can't start looking forward here 5 or 10 years in our management thoughts, then shame on us. I think they've done a great job at trying to deal with any increased efficiencies people may perceive by having more than one permit on a vessel. You know, 240, 280 days a year at the dock is just, it's just kidding. People are taking safety equipment, electronics. I mean, pretty soon they're going to take the engines from one boat and put it in the next boat. I mean, that's how ridiculous this is getting. So that's one of my rationale. The other reason is, you know, it's a voluntary program. You don't want to deal with it? Don't deal with it. I don't see how you're disadvantaged. I can't come to grips with that if somebody doesn't want to do it or somebody does want to do it. So the safety issues are real. I don't see much discussion in the document about that. And for that reason, I am going to vote against this motion, which is probably not a surprise to many people. But I don't think we've given enough attention to that in any of our decisions. And we need to, and I've tried to with my time here, to bring that to the front. Man, we got boats here that have been in 8% of the boats are like 50 years old. I don't care what you do to them. New boats are better. The facts bear that out. The casualty rates bear that out. We've got a new safety regulation that's just gone through Congress that the new boats will be more stable, more safe. It's just, we've got to be forward-looking. The other issue is, they're right. We are right on the fine line of overfishing in this fisheries. I mean, we're below it, which is great, but it's right on the line. It won't take much to make this fisheries have to be cut even further. Instead of 280 days a year at the dock, we'll be up to 320 days a year at the dock. I mean, at what point do we allow people to deal with that kind of issue? So I think this has been worked on for 3 years. It was a reason we had this amendment, and now it's not being taken away. One of the reasons we had this amendment. So, again, I can't say much more other than I am opposed to this motion.
Anyone else on the council? Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I voted for the no action alternative on stacking in the last committee meeting, and just want to provide a little more rationale in addition to what the chair has already offered for the committee's rationale, and that is that both stacking and leasing are responsive to the issue that's in this portion of the amendment, that is addressing excess capacity. But I think leasing, in contrast to stacking, better affords opportunities for single vessel owners to lease in and lease out, and not just presenting opportunities to multiple permit owners that would accrue under stacking. So I think in terms of the opportunities it creates, leasing provides a more equitable degree of opportunities for independent owners as well as multiple permit owners. So I felt that leasing was a better preferred alternative than stacking on this issue, and therefore supported the no action alternative.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Jimmy and Mary Beth. I mean, I just don't get this. We've been talking for years about overcapacity in this fishery and others, talking for years about vessel safety, aging of vessels, overcapacity. And here we have an opportunity to address it, and we're going to run away from it because it's unpopular. Jimmy's right about something else. We are overfishing. I mean, we had to go to 3 decimal points to conclude that F wasn't at the threshold level. Well, we can't measure that. That's absurd. It's disingenuous to say we're below it. So I oppose this motion. It doesn't make any sense to me. Thank you.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't find anything in the three people who have already spoken to oppose, but that's not, to me, the important point. I'm going to support the motion. It was a difficult choice, and it's a difficult issue. In theory, I favor the concept of increasing fleet efficiency by increasing the number of business options that every individual can have. The problem with this one, and the thing that sways me on it, is that it results in an inequality of opportunity. We have one group over another favored, and it also has a potential negative effect on the general category community in this unique situation where we have a part of the fleet that's governed by ITQs and a part of the fleet that is governed by input controls. To make it equal, we use a mortality adjustment. What that really is a method of allowing an increase in efficiency and then taking it away through micromanagement. Micromanagement is something that I'm deeply philosophically opposed to, micromanagement by a government agency. I see the effect that it had in the ground fishery, and I suspect that it would have the same effect in this case. Once you begin going down that road, it escalates exponentially, and you wind up in a trap that you can't get out of. And I've made no secret of the fact that I dislike input controls, and I specifically dislike days at sea. I think that this fishery is a prime example of a fishery that would benefit from a quota management scheme. That's something I'd like to see. But at this point, I don't see that I can overcome in my own mind the negatives of stacking in this particular case under these particular circumstances. So I will support the motion.
Rodney?
Well, as you know, I was in favor of this motion at the beginning for the same reasons Jimmy said. He said it much better than I could in Mr. Enochson, because it does promote safety. It does get old boats out of the water. It does unclutter the docks. But we're here to manage fish. If there's too many boats in the docks in New Bedford, it's New Bedford's problem. It's not our problem. If fishermen choose to fish in unsafe boats, that's their problem. What made me turn this against this motion that I was so in favor of at the beginning was it hurts the person that cannot stack. We're so close to the overfishing line, if we allow stacking and the boats become more efficient, we take off an older boat, put it on a newer boat, and that boat creates overfishing, or we get to the overfishing definition, then it's going to come off of everybody. I would be more in favor of a motion or a management scheme that deals with the people that are causing the overfishing. They pay the penalty. So for that reason, I'm going to support the motion and go for no action.
One of the council that hasn't spoke. Dave Gatham.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. As a barely living example of why fishing is the most dangerous occupation around, I'd just like to say that I'm in favor of no action. I don't see this as capacity reduction. I see this as some kind of capacity delay. If we wanted to truly do capacity reduction, we would have put in a conservation tax. We would have redistributed the conservation tax to the remaining fishermen in some way. We would have found a way to mitigate job loss. We would have done a lot of things that aren't done by this at all. And I personally just don't think that we really have any business being involved in this particular aspect of fishing. This is not a biological decision. This is a strictly an economic and social decision. With that being said, I'm not going to belabor a lot of the points that have already been made that I agree with, but I would ask that there be a roll call vote when you call a question.
Anyone else in the council that hasn't had a chance before I go back to the chair? Mark?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Dave Preble and Dave Gable down the table. There are a couple other things I wanted to add. One is that if you look at Section 312 in the Magnuson-Stevens Act that addresses overcapacity, there are two important elements to a capacity reduction program. One is that you get rid of boats. The other is that you get rid of the permits that go with those boats, as well as the attendant fishing privileges that go with those permits. That's not happening here. You're only doing half the job. Removing the vessels benefits the vessel owners. Removing the permits and the fishing privileges benefits everybody, all the remaining permit holders. And I think that's an important idea. David touched on it. Is missing here. The other thing is that the PDT put an admirable effort into developing the fishing power adjustment and mortality adjustment. And what that does is gives us an adjustment for an average vessel in one category if it jumps to an average vessel in another category. However, I'm inclined to believe that the most attractive opportunities for stacking are going to involve below average boats permits onto above average vessels, and I think that's going to skew the LPUE distribution in the fishery, and I think that has some important consequences. One is, as Dave Preble pointed out or believes, that this fishery might be better managed under output controls, and And if you rearrange the LPUE landscape a little bit, it's going to make it a little more difficult to accomplish that. Whether the changes in LPUE are real or perceived, it's going to make it more difficult to, say, conduct a referendum, for other types of controls. And as they did point out, I mean, we're so close to F. We don't want to change LPUE for one group at the expense of another. So for those reasons, I'm for this motion. Thank you.
Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm opposed to the motion. I think that the people that have spoken before me have articulated it very well. The one thing I would add is that I do think we have an obligation to deal with the situation that we've got in the scallop fishery. We have a requirement under the Magnuson Act to look at the efficiency issue. And if we've created a situation, which we clearly have in the scallop fishery, that creates inefficiencies, then I think we have an obligation to try to take action to fix that.
Okay, Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I'm not speaking as the chair now, but I'm representing my agency and my own views regarding stacking, and I'll do that as well on the leasing issue. I spent a lot of time going over the public record, reading the letters, and, boy, there have been some very well-thought-out letters with some very convincing arguments against stacking. Of course, there have been some good arguments for stacking as well by those individuals who have multiple permits, multiple vessels. If I was them, I would want to stack too. But I have to look after, and the agency has to look after, the best long-term and short-term interests of the sea scallop fishery, and certainly here in Massachusetts. I call your attention, by the way, to a letter that was given to you by my director, Paul Diodati, and that summarizes pretty much the major points that we have to make about stacking and leasing. So, very convincing arguments made by the public, those who have many years of involvement with the sea scallop fishery, opinions that I value greatly. And I've studied those opinions, and the conclusions that I have drawn relate to my agency as well. The inability of us at this point in time to support stacking. We think it would be a serious mistake, short and long term. Frankly, we feel it's more important for us to think towards a more comprehensive approach that would have to be considered in a future amendment. Yes, it would be nice to do it right now, I suppose, but not really. In light of the catchier management policy being developed and soon will be offered up in final form by the service, in light of the fact that we need to make sure, not just try, we need to make sure that stacking will not prevent adverse impacts on those who cannot or choose not to stack. That is absolutely a definite as far as we're concerned. With stacking, we are convinced through PDT analyses, notably, and through our own understanding of the fishery, that permit stacking will lead to increased efficiency, it will lead to increased landings per unit effort, and that will then result in a cut in days at sea and other restrictions in the future, probably the near future, that would impact far more the single permit, single vessel owners. Those who can stack will be able to survive. They'll be able to make do, but those others will not. That really would be an inequitable impact towards those individuals within the fishery. Another issue that's near and dear to my heart in particular, and I know that some people don't share this perspective, we firmly believe that National Standard Number 5 will be violated if indeed we have stacking. And apart from National Standard Number 5, but really related to it, we have the National Standard 5 guidelines. And they say, where conservation and management measures are recommended that would change the economic structure of the industry or the economic conditions under which the industry operates, the need for such measures must be justified in light of the biological, ecological, and social objectives of the FMP as well as the economic objectives. And we contend, especially after listening to the industry that has weighed in on this so heavily, that it will change the economic structure of the industry. It will change the economic conditions of the industry under which it operates. So we have to then look at the consequences of stacking relative to those three objectives. Well, clearly we have a conservation neutral plan, the DEIS. It's conservation neutral. It's stated that way. So it cannot be justified in light of biological and ecological objectives. Regarding the social objectives, I call your attention to the second page of the letter that Paul Diodati sent to this council. And this is in the DEIS, page 301. It says very specifically that leasing and stacking, obviously I use the word leasing as well because our sentiments are the same for leasing. Leasing and stacking will speed up consolidation and accompanying social impacts. The primary social impacts documented in empirical cases involving consolidation, stacking and leasing are many, and they're listed on page 303 of the DEIS. Employment loss, structural disadvantage to the smaller vessels and firms, concentration of capital and market power, etc. And then there's the conclusion of the social analysis within the DEIS on page 312. And this is a compelling argument as far as I'm concerned and leads me to very, very firmly oppose stacking. Leasing and stacking tend to have the negative impacts on those less powerful segments of the fishing industry, namely the crew or the small business owners without a fleet of vessels or vertically integrated business. So, just with that said, and I could add a lot more, but I will not, our position is very firm on this. It's been clearly stated that we oppose stacking and that if indeed we are going to truly address excess capacity in the scarlet fishery, we're going to have to do so through a comprehensive amendment that is very specific to the issue of excess capacity in this fishery, and then implement strategies that would protect those who need protection, and that is the single permit, single vessel holders who will not be able to benefit from, in this particular case, stacking opportunities.
Okay, thanks, Dr. Pierce. I think it would be appropriate to ask our general counsel if this measure that we've been working on for the better part of 3 years is indeed a violation of National Standard 5 from your perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I come to the totally opposite conclusion of Dr. Pierce in terms of whether National Standard 5 is violated or whether these measures are inconsistent with National Standard 5. You need to read National Standard 5 and the guidelines in toto, not just pick out one sentence, because the rest of National Standard 5 explains the terms that are used in the sentence that was just quoted. National Standard 5, just to repeat it for everyone, and I'm going to do some reading from the National Standard Guidelines because I think that's the best way to highlight this instead of just hearing my opinion. Conservation and management measures shall, where practicable, consider efficiency in the utilization of fishery resources, except that no such measure shall have economic allocation as its sole purpose. So this actually is an obligation for the council to consider efficiency in the fishery. Efficiency is considered to be in and of itself an important goal of the Madison-Stevens Act. There are many other purposes besides conservation that the Madison-Stevens Act addresses, and efficiency is one of them as incorporated in this national standard and is further elaborated on in the national standard guidelines. And let me just read a couple portions of the guidelines that help explain the obligation to consider efficiency. In theory, an efficient fishery would, start back. This is in part B. The term utilization, of referring to utilization of resources, encompasses harvesting, processing, marketing, and non-consumptive uses of the resource, since management decisions affect all sectors of the industry. In considering efficient utilization of fishery resources, this standard highlights one way that a fishery can contribute to the nation's benefit with the least cost to society, Given a society of objectives for the fishery, an FMP should contain management measures that result in as efficient a fishery as is practicable or desirable. In terms of the use of the term fishery, the guidelines say, in theory, an efficient fishery would harvest the OY with the minimum use of economic inputs, such as labor, capital, interest, and fuel. Efficiency in terms of aggregate cost, then, becomes a conservation objective, where conservation constitutes wise use of all resources involved in the fishery, not just fish stocks. In an FMP, management measures may be proposed that allocate fish among different groups of individuals or establish a system of property rights. Alternative measures examined in searching for an efficient outcome will result in different distributions of gains and burdens among identifiable user groups. An FMP should demonstrate that management measures aimed at efficiency do not simply redistribute gains and burdens without an increase in efficiency. And then if you go down to the section that was just quoted, this section starts out with the sentence, "This standard prohibits only those measures that distribute fishery resources among fishermen on the basis of economic factors alone and that have economic allocation as their only purpose. Where conservation and management measures are recommended that would change the economic structure of the industry or the economic conditions under which the industry operates, the need for such measures should be justified in light of the biological, ecological, and social objectives of the FMP, as well as the economic objectives." Now, economic objectives is referring to, as economists know, to efficient use of goods and services and resources to the most efficient end, as well as any other economic objectives that might be considered or put forward for a particular fishery management plan. So in light of the full reading or more expanded reading of the National Standard Guidelines, I think the amendment puts forward that it is intended, or this alternative puts forward that is intended to maximize or increase efficiency in the scallop fishery. And I think even those that have, are opposed to it have admitted or have recognized that it will increase efficiency to some degree. There are other purposes that are stated in the amendment document. There is a statement that it will tend to increase safety at sea. There's also something that's been totally overlooked, and that it will decrease costs, at least as analyzed in the document. Decreasing costs is actually a separate national standard, National Standard 7. So even if you buy into the idea that there's some economic allocation that might occur here, that certainly is not the sole purpose, as stated in the document and as reflected in the national standards, of this particular alternative. So given that it does meet economic efficiency objectives, it has other purposes other than economic allocation, and arguably the purpose is not to allocate economically. That has already been done in Amendment 4 and other amendments since then. This is just a means to create more efficient fleets. I don't see any inconsistency at all with National Standard 5. Now, having said that, there are National Standard 5 does recognize that you don't have to have an efficient fishery if there are other overriding biological or sociological objectives. And those kinds of objectives, maximum employment, could justify not having an efficient fleet. So my finding that this alternative doesn't per se or even indirectly violate National Standard 5 does not mean that you have to adopt the alternative, as long as you can show other objectives that are trying to be achieved, some of which I think have been articulated here by those who are in favor of this particular motion.
Anything further from the council? Jimmy?
Yeah, just one point I forgot to mention, and that, you know, I've talked to a lot of fishermen about this issue, and a lot of them say that if we allow this, then it's going to allow the council to cut us further. You know, in other words, if we allow people to put two permits together and you get X days, then it'll allow the council to cut us further because our break even will be down at a different level. And I think those people are missing that the new requirements of Magnuson, that we have ACLs and AMs. It's like they don't understand that's there. That's what's going to cause us to cut, not that you have enough days to break even or enough days to make a small profit. So I just think that some people are missing that. They're missing that we are required now under New Magnuson to do the cuts. It has nothing to do with how many days you have. It has nothing to do with your break even. It has to do with the biology of the stock. So that I'm afraid we're going to see 50 days a year or 40 days a year coming at us pretty soon. And we are not going to have any mechanism to deal with that situation, because by the time we realize that, hopefully it doesn't happen, but I think it's probably likely at some point, then the industry's going to have there's no mechanism for them to deal with that, and they're going to be in tough shape looking down the road. Thank you.
Okay, we've had a request for a roll call vote, so I'll turn to Paul Howard and ask him to call the roll.
Please read the motion on the board and respond yes, no, or abstain. Mark Alexander.
Yes.
Rodney Avila. Frank Blount.
No.
Rip Cunningham. Rip Cunningham.
No.
Jim Fair.
Yes.
Mark Gibson.
No.
David Gaethel.
Yes.
Doug Grout.
Yes.
Pat Kirkle.
No.
Mike Leary.
Yes.
Glenn Libby.
Yes.
Sally McGee.
Yes.
Jimmy Odlin.
No.
David Pierce.
Yes.
Dave Preble.
Yes.
Terry Stockwell.
Yes.
And Mary Beth Tooley.
No.
So the ayes have it.
Motion passes. Back to you, Committee Chair Pierce.
All right, the next motion is motion number 11, which is a motion to adopt leasing of days at sea and or access area trips as preferred for Amendment 15, Alternative 3.3. That is a motion I make on behalf of the committee, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, Karen has all these. Okay.
Okay, committee motion. I'm going to use the same process here that I used for the last motion. Any questions of clarification, not debate or position taking from the council, but questions of clarification from the council members on the motion itself? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to go to the audience. Anyone wishing to speak in favor of the motion? Mr. Hughes?
That's what happened this morning.
One pulled out.
Yep.
Yeah. Test. Okay.
Sorry to blow your ears off like that. Thank you for providing me the opportunity to make some comments today. My name is Peter Hughes. I represent Atlantic Cape Fisheries in Cape May, New Jersey. I am for this motion. I see this motion as providing opportunity. Opportunity for not only multi-boat owners, but opportunity for individual boat owners. I had heard some comments earlier about an effort shift into other fisheries. You know, boats that have, say, squid permits and fluke permits, they already have that ability. Right now, we have about 285 days of opportunity and ability to prosecute those other fisheries, of which some of us are doing right now that have those permits. I look at the groundfish plan and how leasing in the groundfish, which affects about, you know, close to 1,000 vessels, does not prevent anybody else from prosecuting another fishery and shifting effort into another fishery. Right now, we have that opportunity without leasing and without stacking to go out and utilize those other permits that we have on board our boats, up to the tune of 285 days a year. In the future, I see that if we do get cut down, cut back on days at sea, we might be fishing 50 days a year. And, you know, for those boats that did not lease or stack, stacking's kind of off the table, but they have that much more opportunity to go ahead and prosecute those other fisheries. I'm certainly not going to tie up my scallop permit to go fish 30,000 pounds of scup every 2 weeks for 25 cents a pound. That's just not economically feasible, nor is it efficient on our part. Thank you very much.
Oops. Okay, anyone wishing to speak against the motion? Against. Mr. Loveberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and council members here. I'm Jim Lovegren, Fisherman's Dock Cooperative. I first want to read a comment for a full-time scallop fisherman from New Jersey who has provided written comments, and he can't make it up here. So this is from Ortioxi with the Kristen Alexa. It's a family-owned business. All the issues pro and con concerning leasing and stacking are on the table, but most are con. The great majority of permit holders are against leasing and stacking, as are the representatives of the people. Representative Barney Frank, Mayor Scott Lang of New Bedford, and my Congressman Chris Smith. In light of that majority, any council person who would vote for stacking or leasing is un-American and spitting in the face of democracy. And that's already Oxy's words, not mine. Now, this has been a very serious concern to Fisherman's Dock Cooperative. We have 12 owner-operator boats here. A number of them have scallop permits, part-time permits. A few of them were lucky enough to get general category permits, and half of us basically got kicked out of a fishery that we had participated in for 30 years, although on a seasonal and sometimes not even for years basis, but we always had that opportunity being in a mixed trawl fishery in the mid-Atlantic. You fish for what is available to you when it's available on a seasonal, annual, or decadal basis. And we've been kicked out of everything because we just don't happen to fit into the time frame you use, okay? All of our boats would have got days at sea scallop permits if you used 85, 86 for trawl scallop fishermen, okay? We didn't. There somehow was apparently only a three-year qualifier for the trawl vessels as opposed to the dredge vessels that got five. We were given a general category scallop permit, which at that time, up really until the year 2000, was very ineffective in use because the scallop price was so low it just wasn't worth it to go out for 400 pounds. Now, what our vessels were doing from 2000 to 2005 was blackback flounder fishing. Okay, and gee, guess what? That's the qualifying period for general category scallops, which we then started fishing for maybe 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008 or so forth. But our blackback flounder permit is basically, the groundfish permit has been devalued totally because there's no possession limit on a fish I could right now go out and catch 2,000 pounds in an hour of. Okay, that is, but there are none of these fish out there. Point being here is that through a step-by-step process, this council has stripped of our ability to persecute this fishery. Now we have those people, the haves, because this council has created a have and a have-not industry, okay? This, if you have a scallop permit, whether it's limited access general category or limited access days at sea, you are assured of surviving in this industry unless the scallops disappear, okay? Because in one or two trips, a days at sea scallop vessel makes more than I stock all year, all right? Yet they want more. 5% general category, no. My argument, which wasn't made, was when you went to days at sea and you created general category scallop fishery, those boats that didn't qualify for a days at sea permit, what was their percentage of the total catch? And that I don't think was ever discussed anywhere. You said these are the days at sea, this is their allocation. Whatever that catch was, and that could have been 20%, they could have had 20%, but I don't know what they got anyway. It became 5%. Okay? They want more. They took away. We had 30, 40 boats a day running in out of Manasquan Inlet last year, and this year we have about 5 because they all lost their permits. And now here they are. They're back asking for more. I want more. And it just reminds me of the greedy Wall Street people that just can't have enough. Leasing of days at sea, and I can't agree with Peter there who just spoke. This is our concern. It will come back, and it will hurt me because that vessel that leases is not going to stay tied to the dock. Okay, he's going to put it on another boat, makes that other boat more efficient. That other boat makes even more money, of which he will then buy my permit, which I can no longer afford to operate my boat because his vessel at least those days is now in my fishery that has a trip limit or a quota, and now his vessel, they're having the best of both worlds, and it's at my expense. It's at all the little guys, okay? If you're really worried about safety, I know $50 million that NIMS put forward there that could have been used as a revolving loan fund for people to buy new boats on a retirement basis, yet it's being used for catch shares. We do not agree with the leasing of days at sea. I know that due to my comments, you have addressed the lack of, your total lack of economic analysis of leasing at days at sea on other fisheries, the transfer of effort that will take place. I basically, your analysis is enough to fend off a lawsuit. I don't find it adequate. I don't think it really, it, you know, you name how many vessels. Well, out of the scallop permits, almost 300 of them, almost every one of them has a summer flounder permit, you know, like 95% of them and so forth. This is the fisheries that I work in that I still have left. They will be in my fisheries, and you know, I can't go in their fishery anymore because they took it from me. And that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Someone wishing to speak in favor of the motion? In favor? Jeff?
Good afternoon, Council. My name is Jeffrey Pike, and I'm here today representing the Scallop Capacity Reduction Coalition, a group of sea scallop vessel owners from Maine to New Jersey who collectively own 100 limited access permits. The coalition was formed in 2007 to address a single issue of capacity reduction in the sea scallop fishery, and our goal from the beginning has always been to more closely match harvesting capacity with resource availability. I have some very good news for this council and members, particularly those on the committee. This is the last time you're going to hear me speak on this matter. And I hope, and I love all the love from the crowd in the back. It's been great over these years. The council appropriately identified capacity reduction as a major goal of MAP 15 because there's unquestionably overcapacity. When a full-time limited access vessel fishes approximately 80 days a year and remains tied to the dock for 285 days, well, that's ample enough evidence of an overcapitalized fishery. Leasing now is the only option on the table for capacity reduction left in Amendment 15. And if the council does not approve leasing, we will have failed collectively to meet a major goal of the amendment. I don't intend to repeat the testimony from public hearings or previous council meetings, but I will speak in favor of the leasing motion as an effective voluntary measure to reduce fishing capacity. We believe that the motions on leasing approved by the AP and the committee are very conservative and will preserve a conservation-neutral approach. We frankly think the 11% mortality adjustment, that's separate from the fishing power adjustment, is too high. But understanding that this can be changed in a framework, up or down, we believe this cautious approach is probably the most appropriate right now. We've polled our members, and I can tell you that this one factor, the mortality adjustment, represents a loss of more than $100,000 per year per boat from the days at sea reduction. Virtually every member of our coalition has testified in some venue that they run one crew for two boats, and they don't intend to eliminate jobs. To the contrary, our goal is to eliminate steel, not jobs. Plain and simple. That's it. We've reviewed the letter from Mass DMF, and as a former commercial fisherman and congressional aide who has worked for more than 30 years in support of the DMF, I found the letter intellectually dishonest. Instead of supporting a voluntary leasing program available to all limited access scallop vessels, their position is to jettison this program, which has been under development for 3 years, and instead institute a catch share management and ITQ program. And the basis for this view appears to be the so-called overwhelming industry opposition. Very interesting. Many of those opposing capacity reduction are the exact same ones that oppose limited access program implemented in 1994 through Amendment 4. Had the council listened to them then, we'd have over 1,000 vessels in the fishery today. Then there was Amendment 7 in 1998 that introduced two new closed scallop areas. And guess what? They oppose that too. So why do you think they're right today? The DMF references leasing provisions that were proposed in Amendment 7 and argues that because full-blown leasing wasn't instituted at the time, that it should be rejected today. But what they didn't tell you is that Amendment 7 made temporary leasing of scallop days at sea a frameworkable item. That's right. If you look at Title 50, U.S. Code 648.55, you'll see leasing of days at sea included in the items that can be done through a framework action. So this council did consider that and thought of it so much they put it as a framework item. DMF also says that they read all the public comments. If this is true, then they know that the very individuals providing testimony against leasing and stacking also indicated in the very same testimony their strong opposition to sectors, catch shares, IFQs, ITQs. So if you think leasing is a difficult issue and a lot of industry opposition, wait till you get to catch shares and ITQs. Leasing is not a new concept. We've adopted it in many of our fisheries. And it's not the end-all solution for the scallop fishery. But it is a small step towards rationalization at no cost to the government. And every vessel owner has the opportunity to participate. Steel will be removed. There will be fewer boats. There'll be safer ones. And there won't be loss of jobs. At the end of the scallop committee meeting last week, where leasing was approved, there was a much greater sense of unity among the entire industry. Today we have industry leaders who are not part of our group lobbying on behalf of leasing from Virginia to Maine. I believe the limited access fleet's ready to take this on in such a way that does not hurt their fellow vessel owners. In closing, I would like to recognize the hard work of the council staff, the PDT, and NIMS to get Amendment 15 to this point. And if you're still undecided about how to vote, don't listen to me. Listen to the AP. Listen to the committee. Support the process. And don't let the perfect get in the way of the good. I urge you to support this motion. Thank you.
Okay. Those wishing to speak against, Rep. Strauss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to all the members of the council for the courtesy of letting me be heard today. I want to speak against the motion that you have before you, and let me say I do that with a great deal of respect for the individual and collective experience and talent and knowledge that you bring to it. I apologize. I've been speaking at the committee level previously. My name is William Strauss. I'm a Massachusetts state representative from Mattapoisett. Within our legislature, I'm chairman of our Environment and Natural Resources Committee, which has jurisdiction on our state fisheries issues. I will say this with regard to leasing. There's no question that the vote you just took with regard to the stacking issue was a difficult one. There's no question about the sincerity of the different opinions that were expressed. To the extent that the leasing issue is a process or a tool that's available to a wider segment of the fishery, that this makes it an even tougher vote for you. There's even more for you to weigh, and I respect the difficulty that you have. Let me say, first of all, with regard to the statements that were made by the immediately prior speaker with regard to my state's Division of Marine Fisheries. I think we all know, those of us who've been around a career of attending meetings, for better or worse, that when you hear phrases like intellectually dishonest, those are the polite phrases that those of us who wear suits use when we want to say something else that maybe would be even stronger and maybe is not considered appropriate. I have to say, because you've worked with the people from my state's Division of Marine Fisheries for decades, whether I agree or you agree or disagree with them on individual issues, I can tell you that they have an incredible degree of respect, honesty, decency, and credibility. I was sorry to hear the attack on them just now, simply because apparently they disagreed. It's unfortunate. So let's focus on the issue at hand. With regard to the leasing issue, let me say first of all, and I've told the friends that I have on both sides of this issue, and I do have friends on both sides of this issue within my port, which is the Port of New Bedford, that I can conceive of a leasing program for this fishery at some point which takes fair account of the different interests and concerns that obviously you see among these down the fault line of multiple permit holders and single boat, single permit holders. I think in a 400-page document where four pages of Amendment 15 is devoted to leasing, you're not there yet. And with the absence of the kind of socioeconomic impacts and the details about whether the leasing involves days at sea for all trips, days at sea into the special access areas, whether it's individual trips, whether it's for a season, how long the leasing should be. Is it one season? Is it two season? I know with the stacking debate you had issues about, is it a one-way trip or can you de-stack? With leasing, I'll tell you this, it's mix and match. I don't think anyone on the council can say for sure that different kinds of variations, creative businessmen owning boats and going out to fish will be able to come up with and what will be the impact on the fishery. That's always the missing touchstone, I think, so far in the debate I've observed this summer. We are divorced from the fishery management issues. That bioresource that I think is your prime concern. And once you are divorced from a plan, as you are here under the draft environmental impact statement, which I take as a meaningful, serious document, once you're divorced from considering a plan that has an effect on the resource, you are, please pardon the pun, operating without a net. You now are junior economists. And let me say this, as qualified collectively and individually as you are in the fishery area, think of the economic regulatory activities that our state and federal governments engage in with people with plenty of degrees and experience, and they have trouble getting right. You're dealing with a plan here that really is. Whether you're allowed to do it under National Standard 5 or not is beside the point. The real point is, should you? Should you be engaging the resources of the federal government to decide how this plays out economically? Aren't you a little far afield from fishery regulation? As I say, and I'll close with this, I do think, because I know of examples in other state fisheries where I've had constituents concerned, not this scallop area, but that there is a conceivable role where a carefully designed program of leasing where consensus is obtained first, not after, where consensus is obtained first, that kind of plan is out there, could be accomplished. But you haven't accomplished that. You're doing it, and it's not your fault, but you're doing it in a backward way. You're buying the package. It says leasing. You're at the department store. The lights are flashing. Everybody feels good about it. And you're going to bring it home later and find out what's inside when you open the box. I don't think you should do that. I think the council should take a pass on this. And as a result, that would mean rejecting this amendment to adopt leasing. I appreciate the time and the attention you've given to me today. Thank you.
Bill Wells.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the misfortune of speaking after Representative Strauss. That was really good testimony, I must say. And somebody had to be next. I do disagree with several of the points he made, and I am here to speak in favor of leasing. My name is Bill Wells. I'm a fourth-generation fisherman. I work in Seaford, Virginia. I am a scallop advisor, and I appreciate the privilege that you have given me to serve you in that capacity. I would like to briefly state that in the state of Virginia, we have about 75 scallop boats. This is our most valuable fishery by far, most valuable marine fishery by far in the state of Virginia. In addition, we are now the second largest port and have been for about a decade. This is a big deal in Virginia. Unfortunately, because of distance and somewhat of a comfort zone in my state, we have very little input from people in my area. In fact, I suspect that with the exception of Rick Robbins and myself, I don't think there's anybody else here from the state of Virginia, even though this is such an important fishery to our state. That said, I am not representing the state of Virginia, but I wanted to mention that the dock that I manage, which has 16 vessels, 14 full-time limited access, these boats are owned by three families, and they have asked me to come here and represent them. All the boats that are there are owned by people that currently or formerly have fished, just as I have. There are 19 family members that work with me, either as captains, crew, engineers, mates. We have two people that work in our office. This is a big deal. This is a family deal. We are not vertically integrated. We are boat-oriented, and we are not a member of any group that is lobbying you today, no matter what position they have taken on this issue. This I'm speaking for these 14 boats, independent of anybody else's opinion. Briefly, in the public hearing that was well attended in Virginia, there were six of the seven fish houses in my state represented. There were approximately half of the boats. The testimony was overwhelmingly in favor of leasing. Stacking was a little different issue. My memory is that most people were for it. The majority of the public hearing basically was a combination of single boat owners asking questions of staff as to how leasing could benefit them. And that conversation occurred. And at the end of that public hearing, there were no negative comments. There have been, to my knowledge, no letters, positive or negative. But my sense was, as a result of that public hearing, that the state of Virginia is clearly in favor of leasing. Clearly, the dock where I work is in favor of leasing. I would like to mention about two more points before I conclude. About a year ago, when I heard there was going to be a mortality adjustment, which, by the way, I am in favor of, that caught me by surprise. And so I talked to Deirdre a little bit about, you know, how would you come up with a number and how could you do that? So I went to the boats that I have an involvement with, that my father and I personally own. And I took every captain. We've had no new captains, no change in personnel. And I went back for the previous 4 years. That's 08, 07, 06, and 05. And I followed the men as they rotated between, because everybody at our dock, with the exception of three individuals, works on more than one boat. And that is the case in the majority of boats in the state of Virginia. And I thought, okay, I'm going to take these guys and I'll see how they did. Because I'd like to know, is 10% the right number? Is 5%? Should it be 20%? I had no idea. In three of the 4 years that I looked at, and these are all real numbers that I had access to, the boat made absolutely no difference. It was the man. And I wasn't surprised at that, really. I just didn't think it would come across that clearly. And I'll say what I think everybody in this room, no matter what side of the issue you're on, would agree with. You take a bad captain and put him on a good boat, and he still can't catch. And you take a good captain and put him on a bad boat, and he will find a way to catch. Now, that's the reality of fishing. No matter which side of this issue you're on, that is the reality. And that's exactly what I saw in three of the 4 years that I investigated. Now, within these boats, there was everything from 500 horsepower to 1,140. We're not talking about similar boats. Two swing boats, the captains run their own boat 100% of the time and run a second boat part of the time. I was surprised at the results. I did find 1 year when that was not the case. The better boats clearly outperformed the boats with less power. And the only thing that I could come up with in looking at that was that when the production was down, the boat did make a difference. I can't account for anything else. The personnel is the same. They're in the same ocean at the same time. It has to be the boat. But in three of those 4 years, the seven-man crew was the limiting factor. That's the only other reason I can come up with. It had to be the seven-man crew. And those 3 years were the best in terms of LPUE. They were the three best of the 4 years that I examined. My next step and my last point about this was I said, well, how much better were they in that year? All I can tell you is it was less than 10%. At that point, there was no proposal out there for what the mortality adjustment should be, so I was just trying to get a rounded number. I didn't go any further than that. I know it was less than 10%. It might have been 9. It might have been 3. I just was trying to figure out, was it above or below 10%. This is a real examination with real fishermen on real boats in 4 years. It's non-scientific. But it tells me that the mortality adjustment is a good idea. It will take care of that outlying year when production is down. The seven-man crew will take care of the other years when production is up. And if all of us here,
in front of me and behind me are doing a good job, hopefully we'll have more years when we're doing well and that seven-man crew will kick in. One other point I wanted to make before I conclude. A lot of people have talked about employment, and I get that. I don't live in New Bedford. I do a lot of business in New Bedford. I've got a pair of winches up here at Marine Hydraulics right now getting ready to return to me. I can't speak for New Bedford, but in my part of the world, in Virginia, I just don't know of anybody that's a good fisherman that isn't on a second boat. I don't know of one person. Now, I know some people that are older that are good fishermen that don't care to work on a second boat. They've made a choice, and I respect that. But everybody that I know in my area that's going at it hard and is a good fisherman, they have a job on a second boat. They may be a mate on that second boat. They may be running the boat part-time or full-time, but they have a second job. My point being that if there is a reduction in boats in my area because of leasing, I just don't think that's going to affect employment. I don't see that happening. Other people have talked to me today about surrounding businesses, welders and so forth, and they have a point. But my answer to them would be if you take two boats and pull a pair of dredges half as long as one boat and you pull them twice as long, the welding will be the same. It's going to be very similar. If you take one boat and work it twice as hard, you're going to wear that engine out. You're going to have twice as many engine hours. This stuff is all linear. It's not exotic. It's linear. It's just the way it is. Will there be a saving to the boat owners? Absolutely, and that's why boat owners like me are here. Yes, we will save money. There's no question about that. The only other point I want to make before I conclude is a lot of people have talked about, well, if there is leasing, how would you handle the purchase of the lease? I'm going to tell you what I would do. I can't speak for anybody else. If I worked for Deirdre and she owned the boat and she could lease a trip, I would expect her to come to me as the captain of that boat and ask me, do you want to do this? And if we both agree that we should, what we would do is we'd take it off the top of the settlement. The owner pays his part. The crew pays their part, and if nobody wants to do it, you just don't get involved in it. What I absolutely will not do is have someone that works with me as a captain or a crewman pay the entire freight for something that will benefit both of us. Now, that I will not do. And I know a lot of other people in my state that would not do that. I suspect most people feel the way that I do regarding that. In conclusion, I would just mention these three points. The first one I learned from my grandfather a long time ago. The most expensive thing you can change on a boat is the captain. And we're being forced by the management plan to do that today. Now, everybody here that's been offshore knows what I meant by that, and I'm not going to try to explain it to everybody else. That's the most expensive thing you can change on a boat, for all the reasons that everybody that's been offshore know about. My second point is, and this was made by Jimmy Odlin, and I know it'll be made by people later today. We're in a good place right now, and you help us get there. I am concerned that we're so close to the edge every year, and I can't explain why. Maybe the model's a little off. This year, for sure, there was a growth spurt in the resource. I know that because we were looking at 2030s and thinking, we the industry, that we were going to land them all year long. And the only 2030s I see coming in from just about anywhere is a few from the Elephant Trunk and from Georges Bank. Everything else has been a 1020. I can't explain this. I don't think the PDT can explain it, but that did happen. We're going to be above our targeted mortality rate. I can't see that we're not going to be. Even if we're not, sooner or later, we're going to get back to some of the years when we're not producing like we are now. We have become comfortable with 55 million pounds a year, and that's great. But when this management plan was passed, as an industry, we were landing 12 million pounds a year. I don't know that we'll ever get back to 12 million, but my experience tells me we're not going to always be at 55 million. That would be naive of me to believe that. And there's some number there that will change a lot of people's minds that are on the fence today about leasing. Maybe it's not 55 million, maybe it's 45 million. Maybe it's not 38 days, maybe it's 28. But there's a number below which
when this industry gets there, we're going to want to be able to lease. And the issues won't be who pays for it. It won't be all these other things. It's going to be how in the world can we get this fast enough so that we don't go out of broke, so that we don't go broke while waiting for the solution to our problem. Last but not least, I want to say that our dock, we've had two boats in the last 4 years that have had major breakdowns right at the end of the year. Could not be predicted, had nothing to do with the quality of the boat, the quality of the maintenance, the quality of the captain, the quality of the crew. One of them sank with a faulty Seacock at the dock, happened over Sunday night. Man comes in, he owns three boats. His best boat is sitting there with 5 feet of water in the engine room. He had to overhaul two generators, the main engine, a clutch, and rewire his engine room. He had four trips left in that year. This happened in November. He went back to work the third week in March. Now, this is a real situation that can happen to anyone. It doesn't matter if you own the Queen Mary or the worst boat in the fleet. Everybody has a Seacock. Things happen. Leasing allows someone who has had that event or an event like that to happen to at least recover some of the money to get back on their feet. This happened to be the man's best boat. He has three sons that work for him. He owns three boats. He could have taken, by the way, three of those were closed area trips. He could have taken that effort and put it on his other two sons, and that would have been a big, big deal for him. Now, you can't just have leasing for every tragedy that comes along, because we'll all have tragedies in January and February. We'll have 300 of them every year. That's not reasonable, but they will occur, and they will occur every year in every state, and this is a way to address that. And I hope you consider that, as well as my other comments, when you make your decision. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Bill. Someone wishing to speak against the motion? Against the motion? Mr. Kaler?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jeff Kalin, representing Lenz Fisheries, Cape May, New Jersey. I had to bring this because I don't have a book, and I wanted to refer to some of the real good work that the PDT did in analyzing this issue of impacts on other fisheries from leasing. This is our biggest concern with leasing. Stacking was cleaner in that those permits, other limited access permits, would be frozen, at least in concept, by the committee. We're told that you can't freeze the other limited access permits in the situation of leasing. I don't really understand legally why that is, unless one is more permanent than the other. It would be interesting for Gene to explain why, for example, in leasing, you couldn't require the other limited access permits that the leasee or leasor holds to be put in the CPH, for example, and taken off the shelf, so that the potential for impacts on other fisheries, the shifting effort into other fisheries, which I think would be the result of leasing, it won't reduce capacity, it will just shift capacity into other fisheries, particularly in the Mid-Atlantic region where we operate. I also was asked to speak to this issue for Greg DiDomenico, the executive director of the Garden State Seafood Association, who's over in Woods Hole right now on the Lolligo assessment, so he was not able to be here. And I don't want to spend a lot of time repeating our testimony, but I did want to refer the council to document number 7 in your binder, which is impacts on other fisheries, and read to you just a couple of sentences, Mr. Chairman, if I could take a moment. On page 5, the PDT states that even under the no-action alternative, it is possible for some vessels to increase their participation in other fisheries if there is a significant change in market conditions and in factors that affect profitability of the scallop fishery relative to other fisheries. At the current market prices for scallops and high profitability of the scallop fishery, it's unlikely, however, for an effort increase in other fisheries. That's a status quo, no action alternative. If we go on to page 10, which is, to the conclusions, really, I think, that the PDT makes in terms of how we view this situation. The PDT says, as discussed above, effort could increase even under the no-action conditions if there's an increase in the profitability in those fisheries that scallop vessels participate in varying degrees. Therefore, it's uncertain to what extent permit stacking or leasing could lead to increased effort in other fisheries compared to the no action. Shit, where is it? Sorry, there's just one off.
It says he just stopped.
I was doing so well, too. Jeez. All right, it says, then, this is the key word, this is the key sentence, and this is the one that I tried to get Dr. Pierce to focus on the other day when I texted him, but he didn't pick up on my text. If the effort is directed to other fisheries, there will be negative economic impacts on the current participants of those fisheries. That is very clear from this approach. And I hate to come up here right after Bill Wells, who I have tremendous respect for. They come all the way up here from New Jersey. He is an excellent chairman, by the way, of the AP. He does a tremendous job, Mr. Chairman. I have to do that because in our neck of the woods, this transfer of effort issue is a major, major issue for the way the fisheries operate down there. It may not be the same issue in New Bedford, but where we are in Cape May, New Jersey, it's the most significant issue from these proposed actions. And for that reason, we oppose the motion. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak in favor of the motion? In favor. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Ray Starvish. I'm a second generation, and my son is a third generation. I'm just going to hit on a couple of things that I think other people have missed. In the leasing proposal, we have a maximum of 2 permits on 1 boat. That's a big deal. So there will not be excess ownership given to any one individual. Another big thing, I would guess, I don't know the number exactly, but the government's probably spent $300 or $400 million buying groundfish permits back now. And there's 2 bills floating around, one for another $100 million and one for another $50 million. This all comes, capacity reduction comes at no cost to the taxpayer. In our economic times, to me, this is very important. In my situation, for me to reduce to 3 boats with 6 permits, I would have to surrender 28 days. And that number is calculated that you would use the 11% efficiency tax and assume that we get 38 days next year. So I would have to surrender 28 days. So this leasing, to me, comes at a very, very high price. It's not free. The one thing that I'm really hung up on, and I can't understand it, is this is a voluntary program. Nobody has to do anything. At the Fairhaven meeting, public hearing, I should say, at the Fairhaven public hearing, one gentleman came to the microphone and said, I'm opposed to leasing. I have 4 boats, 2 captains, and 2 crews, and I like things exactly the way they are. That's the beauty of this. Don't change anything. You can leave it like that. You do not have to do anything. It's your individual choice. I also agree with, I think Jimmy said it or somebody else said it, things are good now. So the opponents to this say, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Well, you can bet your life it will get broken. All of us, I've been coming to these meetings since 1988. In 1988, the council asked the scallop industry to write a management plan and how they would manage scallops. And I spent the month or two writing a 12-page management plan. And I gave a copy to Dr. Pierce, and I gave a copy to some other people. And we have never written a perfect plan. I'm hearing from other speakers that, yes, you're supposed to do this. You're supposed to look at capacity reduction, but you're not there yet. Well, by God, we've been working on this for 3 years. We're as good as we're going to get now. So let's kick this horse out of the box, get it going, and if we find something wrong with it, we can fix it because we've made everything in here frame workable. When Amendment 4 was passed, general category was put in with all the best intentions in the world to allow draggers to come in with 400 pounds, to allow this small boat to exist. What happened? It got put out of control. And you, ladies and gentlemen, fixed it. We can do the same thing with this. We can fix it. In the public comments, I'm not going to say I read them all, but I read an awful lot of them. And what I took away from it was, don't fix it because it's not broke. I don't see any solutions to overcapacity. Anybody that thinks that a boat that stays tied to the dock for 275 days, there is no overcapacity, there's something wrong. I'm one of the bad guys. Way back when, I had a partner, and we owned the Endeavor and Courageous. And we went what we call back-to-back for 4.5 years because we saw limited entry coming and reduction of days. And we were paying $19,000 a month mortgages back then, and we would have lost all our money, gone broke. So we went back-to-back. And in 4.5 years, I think we had one mechanical failure. And the boats used to stay in one day and go out the next with a new crew, and everything was hunky-dory. We leave these boats tied to the dock now. You go down and start them up, and you don't. We go down every month just to start them up to see if they're still breathing. And when you go out fishing, starters get rusty and everything. My last point would be, as far as shoreside capabilities, I use a company called Blue Fleet to weld for me. And my son had to go fishing this summer on a boat. I had to have Blue Fleet come down and do the welding for me because my son was out fishing. Normally, he would do it all. So I honestly believe that if we go to leasing and I have to, and I put two permits on one boat, we cannot do it all ourselves anymore. We're going to have to hire outside people to do the work. Since the boats don't go fishing, we don't haul them out. I haul my boats out every 3 years. Once they start fishing again, we're going to have to drop that 3 years down to 18 months. So there's a lot of things for you to consider. I'm not going to say I was surprised, but what Gene Martin had to say about National Standard 5 and 7 was kind of shocking to me because I honestly didn't know that that was in there. So if you want to believe what he had to say, this is your chance to act on capacity reduction, and I hope you do it with an open mind and an open heart. Thank you very much for giving me the time to address you.
Okay, one more against. Mayor Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate being here before the council. I want to speak very briefly on this issue, and I appreciate the council's vote regarding stacking, and I'd like to speak against the idea of leasing at this point. I think that, first, my feeling on many of these proposals is that they have not had the careful consideration regarding social and economic impact on the individual ports. And specifically, I'm speaking of New Bedford, but I think at this point I'm talking about all the ports that would be involved in the scallop industry. The fact is, I don't agree with Attorney Martin's regarding his interpretation of National Standard 5. I think that he's looking at it from the standpoint of how do you come up with the greatest rationale to allow for social and economic engineering by the council. This is a completely neutral proposal, evidently, regarding conservation or biomass, and is directed at consolidation. If we want to talk about consolidation, and as individuals have said, taking iron off the water, and then people have said, well, New Bedford has a problem. I don't see New Bedford having a problem having the most vibrant fishing industry in the United States. In fact, I see that as a major plus. I know there are many things that we need to do and are trying to cooperate with the government regarding regulations and law enforcement that need to be improved. But the fact of the matter is that it seems to me to come in under the guise of conservation efficiency and retiring vessels that are unsafe in either stacking or leasing, you need to look at the back end of what happens if these programs go through. I think it's very interesting that we've heard individuals say that the great thing about this is strictly a capitalist-based type of measure, a reform, because the government's not going to pay a penny. The fact is that every time someone goes out of business or there's someone on unemployment, we do pay. The government does pay. It may not be categorized under a buyout, or it may not be characterized under a new program that the fisheries or NOAA turns out, but there's a general fund that ends up being tapped in. Taxpayers do pay for loss of infrastructure. They pay for social consequences that leave families in ruins. They pay for unemployment. They pay for foreclosures. They pay any time someone's put out of business as a result of one of these ideas that we're coming up with to tinker with efficiency of the fleet. The great thing, if I took from a logical standpoint what Attorney Martin said, the next step is how the length, the horsepower, the gear, the age of the vessel will all come into play. Eventually, it'll be the crew, as was said by our colleague, our friend from Virginia. At some point, everything will come down to consolidation in the name of efficiency. Before you do this, it seems to me there better be a heck of a study and an explanation as to how leasing would work. Is it parts? Is it length of period of time? Does it retire boats? Leasing boats out isn't going to remove anything, quite frankly. From permits out, won't remove any boat from the city of New Bedford. But they will sit there completely idle and will deal with them. As someone said, New Bedford will have a problem. Our feeling is simply this. At some point, someone said, it's very interesting. The family farmer has so much overcapacity in the United States. There are so many days that they sit idle. Think of those farmers out in Indiana. Half the year they watch the snow fall and then melt. And then the best bet to handle this would be to give preference to the corporate farmer. And how is that working out for the United States of America today? Not very well. You go through the Midwest, which I've had a chance to travel through. You see absolutely the blight of the Midwest is one family farm after another one out. Now, certainly, the fishing fleet has individuals working. We also have some great large companies, vertically integrated, companies that do have the capacity to take on either stacking or take on leasing. But I'd like to know what the consequences are, and I'd like to know what the impact is on the individuals whose permits would be either stacked or leased before we would rush into this. So what I think what Billy said makes an awful lot of sense. And that's we want to try under National Standard 5 come up with a way to justify that we can do this and not call it for economic purposes alone. Then let's sit down for the next X period of time. You've heard from the fleet. It's absolutely a tremendous majority of people who've turned out at the hearings and indicated that they don't think this is the appropriate way to go. There's no emergency regarding the biomass or the fish stock. There's time to sit down and come up with a system that may, in fact, be equitable, that may, in fact, be fair. It may also involve a buyout. But to simply think that capitalistic forces are going to take care of this and then there's no cost to the government is completely naive, a misreading of National Standard 5, and something that surely is going to cause just another major flare-out between the ports of the Eastern Seaboard
and NOAA. And from my perspective, for no reason other than to, I'm not sure what, encourage a green fleet. If we're going to do a green fleet, let's come up and start encouraging all vessels to have a green fleet. If it's maximum horsepower, if it's efficiency from the standpoint of a number of tows, then let's approach it a little differently than assuming that the capitalistic system is going to provide all of that. It may not. So I'd ask you to go, I'd ask you to vote against this. Put a committee together that actually is going to, once again, pull the hood up on the law. Look at the guidelines. I think the guidelines are terrific. I can interpret the guidelines all day long any way I want. At some point, you've got to sit down, go to the ports, and start realizing what the consequences are of legislating from above and not understanding what the consequences are or the unintended consequences are when it's all said and done. So I'd ask you to hold off on this. Let's take a look at it. Let's get everybody together and figure out how this might work. But thank you very much for hearing me.
Okay, I think we've heard a wide range of comments on both sides. We've spent over 2 hours on this. I want to get back to the council. We've been talking about it for 3 years. Council members? Sally McGee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need a few clarifications on the motion, and then I have a few comments. This motion, it just refers to alternative 3.3.3, and there are a number of options underneath. I just want to make sure that the council is clear on whether this motion includes mortality and fishing power adjustments necessarily, or will there be a subsequent motion? Does that hold for a maximum leasing limit as well? Or is that included in this motion? Subsequent motion? And last question, and I assume it's the same, but just to be clear, so with this motion, does the vessel leasing out retain catch history and days at sea usage history, or is that also a subsequent motion?
It's another motion.
Okay, thank you. If I could, Mr. Chairman, thank you. There's a lot of good discussion around this. A few things have come up for me, just to kind of cut to the chase. If there are too many boats idle at the dock, it's been suggested that maybe this is not our problem, but I would say that it is. If fishermen choose to fish on unsafe boats, is that their choice and not our problem? I would say that it is our problem. On the other side of the coin, what does the council do when the fishery goes over the line of overfishing, which it's very close to, which is where we want it to be close, but not going over? But if it does go over under days at sea management, which it is likely to, days at sea will be cut to eliminate overfishing. And in that case, without leasing, there would be no options for an individual to increase the days that they can go fishing through the council process, unless the system is forced and it goes strictly into the political realm, which unfortunately is sometimes the way it goes. However, with leasing, the option, if there is a cut in days at sea, would be then for an individual to lease days. I think we're going to be shooting ourselves in the foot if we're waiting for an emergency to happen, and if we reject leasing. If there's a decrease in days at sea in this fishery, then boats are going to be sitting at the dock idle even longer. For these reasons, and because leasing would be economically accessible to a wider range of the fishery than stacking would have, because the AP supported it, because the committee supported it, I would urge the council to vote yes on this motion. Thank you.
Jim Adler.
I'd like to ask Gene a question and make a comment after that. And Gene, could you read, I know it's short, could you read National Standard 10 to us, please, if you have it handy?
Conservation and management measures shall, to the extent practicable, promote the safety of human life at sea.
Okay, and I have to tell a story, and I hate telling this story because it's, we didn't have leasing in groundfish a few years ago, quite a few years ago, and I had my brother-in-law and my best man at my wedding, died at sea. He had a good boat sitting at the dock, but he didn't have enough days to make a living with that boat. So he went and bought a piece of junk and went fishing. And that boat sunk. And we lost two people out of three. My nephew survived. He died. He survived with the captain of the boat in his arms. He died in his arms in a survival suit. Just luckily, the Coast Guard flew over him and rescued my nephew. We'd lost them all. And that's why I wanted leasing. And it's the same issue here. And you cannot not vote for this amendment. You cannot. Thank you.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Sally raised a number of questions I have or had, but I have a somewhat different view of the answer because I'm supportive of leasing, but not for the preferred alternative that doesn't have all the ornaments signed on it. I don't really know what I'm voting for because I don't know what we're going to select on the other end. The public testimony has reinforced my concerns about the devil in the detail issues and particularly the potential for shifting effort in the other fisheries and the impact on the small single operators. So there's no doubt in my mind that we're going to fundamentally change the fishery. And I wish there was a way we could I could better understand the complete package rather than just a concept.
Dr. Pierce.
Well, I certainly understand the desire by many people in the industry to lease. And I just heard what Jimmy said in the emotion in his voice. It's a very personal situation for him. I understand very clearly why he feels days at sea leasing is something that just should be allowed. I respect the views of those who feel the days at sea leasing is warranted. Sally made a very important point that if we're faced with days at sea cuts in the future, then certainly vessels would want to lease days at sea. Yes, that is true. However, we're faced with a real catch-22 situation that, in part, leads me to oppose days at sea leasing in the scallop fishery. Because, frankly, days at sea leasing is going to lead to cuts in sea, perhaps dramatic cuts in days at sea, as those with many permits, those who lease, are able to get those days, put those days on the more efficient vessels, the newer vessels, increase the vessels with higher fishing power, and that will lead to increased landings per unit of effort, and then across the board affecting multiple permit holders, those that lease, those that don't lease. It will affect the single permit, single vessel owners, everyone, in a dramatic way. Days at sea will be cut. So that's why I say it is a catch-22 situation, one that's very difficult to grapple with. I am influenced by what I witnessed years ago through this council process, through this council when, in Amendment 7, days at sea leasing was discussed. And yes, indeed, the council did say days at sea leasing should be frameworkable, but with certain conditions. Some policies were implemented, and we referenced them in the document, the letter that was sent to this council by Paul Diodati. The ones that stand right out, and this was a previous council decision. I recognize that no council is bound by the decisions of a previous council, but basically the issues are still the same 10 years later or so. And that is, non-participants must not be affected by further reductions in days at sea due to the leasing program. I believe they will be if we have days at sea leasing. The second policy, as stated, leasing should not increase effort in other fisheries. We have already had a few people reference this. Yes, effort will increase in other fisheries. So that is violated, that particular policy or condition discussed and included in the previous amendment would be not met. And then finally, any leasing program should not irrevocably change the structure of the industry. Now, that's a big one, irrevocably change the structure of the industry. And again, I'm convinced, my agency is convinced that indeed days at sea leasing will do so in the scallop fishery. So those are some reasons why I, my agency, oppose leasing. And to the motion specifically, I'll just make one other interesting observation, at least I think it's interesting, and that is when we say we will adopt leasing of days at sea and or access area trips. That means that fishermen will be able to lease quota. And that's an interesting aspect of this. This is not an ITQ program. They will be able to lease quota, and that is not something they can be allowed to do.
David Gith.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I oppose the motion for the same reasons I oppose it in groundfish. It will lead to effort shift. I'll give you an example of that right now. There's a reason the dogfish fishery is closed. It's because people who had relatively limited amounts of groundfish leased out that quota and then turned their attention full bore 7 days a week on dogfish until it was closed. That was an effort shift. Unfortunately, in this world, there is also not equal access to capital. And as such, people who are more, how should we put it, well-financed, well-leveraged, I don't know, I'm not an economist, whatever the term is, that have better access to bigger banks will have a better chance to bid higher amounts on scallops and outbid their neighbors. And just like groundfish, we'll start down the exact same road where small people get forced out because they don't have the access to capital that the bigger multi-vessel players have. The last aspect that troubles me, and I would probably ask Gene for some kind of guidance here, not so much on the days at sea, because that's opportunity, but on the limited access trips, those are specific poundage numbers. And as such, to me, that's an ITQ. And once we allow the leasing of an ITQ, I assume we trigger the LAP provisions, which require a referenda of the people affected. So I would like to hear a little bit about that. Oh, and one last thing, same as the last time, when you call a vote, I request a roll call.
Yeah, we have not considered trip limits in to be ITQs per se. An individual fishing quota is defined as a federal permit, limited access system to harvest a quantity of fish expressed by units or units representing a percentage of the total allowable catch of the fishery that may be received or held for exclusive use by a person. And in the past, we've held that opportunities to fish for quota do not equate the agency has held this, not just this region, that the opportunity to fish for quota on certain numbers of trips does not equate to an allocation by permit of a percentage of the overall allocation of fish. So based on that prior interpretation, it has not been considered to be an IFQ to receive an opportunity to fish for a trip limit.
Rick Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This section of the document that addresses excess capacity proposes to establish some flexibility where there currently is none. It also proposes to improve efficiency with respect to the utilization of the resource, and it proposes to improve the overall economic performance. And I think it does that. From the beginning, I've had the benefit of working on this with the committee, but from the very beginning, the committee and PDT worked to ensure that this would be conservation neutral. And that's really critical because that's what ensures that there won't be impacts to those that don't stack. And so this was a very important element. And I think as such, it's not an allocation. It doesn't propose to make any distribution between or among fishermen. Allowing fishermen to improve their capital efficiency within their current allocations is not an allocation, and as such, I think it is fully consistent with National Standard 5. The committee, in its final recommendations, arrives at a conservation-neutral package with two measures, both the fishing power adjustment and a mortality factor that it recommends at 11%. And I would just point out that the fishing power adjustment analysis is extremely comprehensive. Every match trip and landing record that has a matching dealer record is in that analysis. The statistical dispersion within each of those bins is relatively low. The standard deviation is only 0.03. So I don't think it's fair to say that there's a lot of risk in that analysis. I think it's a very tight analysis. Then on top of that, the committee has recommended the maximum level of a mortality adjustment that was within the range evaluated and recommended by the PDT, that is at 11%. And I think you could have had a technically valid number at a lower range within the PDT's range, but that is responsive to the overwhelming public concerns that we heard that about not wanting to have impacts that would affect those that did not stack. And recall, there is an overarching technical constraint here in this fishery, and that's what Bill Wells was speaking of. We have a seven-man limitation on the crew on open area DAS, and that is, to a large degree, an equalizer. So at some point, horsepower has diminishing returns, and even to the extent that it does result in increased fishing power, it's already captured in the FPA, and then there's an additional precautionary buffer with the mortality factor. And I would submit in response to Terry's point that if the council accepts this motion, that the committee motions would then follow, and that is the one that has an 11% mortality adjustment and all the other constraints that we propose. The industry is not ready, clearly, I think, for ITQs. And I mention this because the issue of catch histories and the potential to have those distorted under leasing, I think, is an important issue. I think if for any reason the assumptions were violated in the FPA or the mortality factor, if you had a period of leasing and that happened, and 5 years from now the industry said we want to go back and allocate the fishery out, you could overcome that. You could go back and revisit leased history. You could adjust for it if it needed to be adjusted, and or you could use a different alternative metric to allocate the fishery. But having said that, the committee in its recommendations recommended that every time that there's a framework cycle, the PDT would evaluate the effectiveness of the fishing power adjustment factor and the mortality factor. So as soon as we get to the next framework cycle, if this is approved, that would be evaluated by the PDT, and then it would be frameworkable. And it wouldn't be automatic like an AM in that sense of the word, but it would provide for a process control. And that way, if you're slightly low or high on your mortality factor, you can adjust it. I think leasing, in contrast to stacking, does more equitably provide for opportunities for single boat owners. It was pointed out that we could be close to the line, and if DAS are reduced in the future, this would create business opportunities for them to maintain their position that they don't have now. Right now, the only way a single permit owner can advance their business interest is to buy another permit at tremendous expense. This would provide for incremental growth in businesses, and I think that really is an equitable way to approach this, and I think it's much better than stacking because of that. I've heard the concerns, and we've addressed them in the committee about potential spillovers to other fisheries. That's something I think we all should be concerned about. Ideally, the committee would have liked to have made a run at that through a sideboard, and we had discussions with general counsel, but we were advised that we don't have the regulatory authority in the scallop FMP to put those impositions on other limited access permits. And so I would just submit that it then becomes the responsibility of the relevant jurisdictions. And in our case, with the squid fisheries, that falls to the Mid-Atlantic Council, where we do have control dates for the squid fisheries that we could act on if we had to. So, I think it falls to the respective jurisdictions and councils to manage those impacts. There have been concerns raised here indirectly about control that would result from leasing. And I would just point out that, in fact, the control issue is most directly addressed through the ownership cap. We have proposed a constraint that would limit the number of permits that could be leased to one additional allocation within the same category. And finally, I think, having sat through the hearing that we had down in Virginia, many of the supporters that were there that spoke universally in support of leasing were people that have been in the business since the 1970s and the 1980s. This is not an outside run on the fishery by any means. These are folks that have been in the fishery for a very long time. Thank you.
Rip Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to support this for a lot of the reasons that the chair from the Mid-Atlantic has given and some of the other people. To me, some of the important issues are that this will give the industry a level of flexibility that I think they are going to need. I think it also gives the council an opportunity in a more short-term fashion than stacking to make adjustments to this alternative.
Rodney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to call for a five-minute break. Just like old boats, old men need pumped the bilges more often, and I'd like to stick around for the conversation. Can we have a five-minute break?
I was just about to call the question, have a roll call vote.
Okay.
Mary Beth, last comment.
Just quickly, Terry raised some issues that I think if you look at page 11, the bottom of page 11, motions 12, continuing on through page 13 and ending at motion 17. I mean, that's the bulk of the leasing motions that the committee made. And I think it does address all of Terry's concerns. If he prefers, we could make it one major motion, or, I mean, it is a good number of motions. But I think we've learned through groundfish leasing what some of the issues that come up are. And these motions clearly address them. We have fishing power adjustments. The motions speak to ownership caps, how history accrues to vessels so that if you lease your days, you don't lose your history. I don't know. I mean, if Terry continues to have concerns, then I would make a motion that we incorporate all of these motions into this to address him. But if he's comfortable, I think it is a little unwieldy. I'd leave it alone.
Anything further? Mark?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have two additional comments. I think that leasing has all the negative attributes or consequences that stacking does, but it also allows more flexibility, which is not necessarily a good thing. I think that there could be some possible unintended negative consequences that come along with that increased flexibility. And in addition, just following up what Dave Gaethel said, I don't think this is an equal opportunity alternative as much as it's made out to be. The single permit owners are going to probably find that affordable opportunities to lease in quota are going to be hard to come by. But multi-boat owners can lease themselves at no or nominal costs, and even if they do lease in from outside of their internal business, they have deeper pockets to do so. So I am sensitive to the safety concerns, and that's what makes this vote hard. But I think on balance, I'm going to oppose this motion.
Okay, there's been a request for a roll call vote, so I'll turn it over to Paul Howard.
Please read the motion and answer yes, no, or abstain. Mary Beth Tooley.
Yes.
Terry Stockwell.
Abstain.
Dave Preble.
No.
David Pierce.
No.
Jimmy Onlin.
Yes.
Sally McGee.
Yes.
Glenn Libby.
No.
Mike Leary.
No.
Pat Kirkle.
Yes.
Doug Grout.
No.
David Gaethel.
No.
Mark Gibson.
Yes.
Jim Fair.
No.
Rip Cunningham.
Yes.
Frank Blount.
Yes.
Rodney Avila.
No.
Mark Alexander.
No.
Rodney.
Motion fails.
We're going to take a break. 15-minute break.
Hawkeyes are going to survive. They're 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 going to survive.